What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Kinda Funny Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Hello, Greg. Top of the afternoon to you.
Top of the afternoon to you, Nick.
I feel like watching him. I didn't know it was going to come out there. It could have been any number of things with Greg. You never know. Is he going to bring back some of my past transgressions to throw back into my face? You know, or is he going to be on my side today? Are we going to be the assholes?
We're going to
be Greg versus Nick again.
Or is he going to be the asshole?
Oh, no. I think that's the thing I didn't expect about this pandemic, right? Was just for it to... I thought I was already at the max level of Nick fandom you could be at. But now when he's on screen, I do just stare at him. You know what I mean? Like, he's like Bill Murray in Ghostbusters. I'm just going to watch him the entire movie, see what he's up to.
That is the greatest compliment anyone's ever given to me. And now Tim and Andy are both dead to me.
Speaking of that, he's the Hispanic heartthrob, Texas treat, Latino heat, clicking heads and ripping them to shreds, the globe-trotting, head-shotting nitro rifle from twitch.tv, Andy Cortez.
Apex Legends Season 5 is back, baby. Let's go. Let's go, Papa. Nick, you didn't give me a chance. Like, you're saying Tim and I are dead to you because Greg paid you this incredible compliment, but we haven't had the chance to say anything yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the floor is open if anyone would like to try and fucking fail miserably at giving me a better compliment than Greg just did. Go ahead.
Try. Introduce Tim next.
Over there, it's Forbes 30 under 30, aka the second best baby blues, aka the verified one, at Tim Geddes.
Your hair's looking real thick.
Nick, talk about me.
Yeah,
damn. Tim is not my best.
That
friend.
Unbelievable.
Tim is not my best friend. I don't care. I'll take it. Can we talk about something real for a second? Because we never do.
I'd love to. It's about time we got real slippers. I'm taking off my fake glasses.
Take off those fake glasses and just slick the hair back a little bit, Daddy. Because the curls give me feels. It's giving me feels in my underlings. Oh. There you go. Andy, put on your fake glasses.
Underlings. Ew.
Can we? Did he say his underlings? I thought he said underpants.
I said underlings. I meant underpants, but I said underlings.
Oh, man, this is Nick's episode. It's going to happen. Everybody watch him.
For real, Andy, why is The Last Dance so fucking good?
Yeah, man.
For real, this show.
Yeah, man.
I don't even like basketball, and I'm now, like, fascinated by Michael Jordan in this thing.
I was sitting there, and I'm like, there's no way. There's no way they're actually going to talk about Space Jam.
And then they fucking did.
Awesome. When we see him practicing in his own little thing and he's inviting all the players over, and it's just like, I'm like, wait a minute. So they must be shooting in LA. That just means the players are all just coming to LA to practice with Jordan. Yeah.
And all the green screen bodies like trying to take the ball from him. Like, it's so good when all the monsters are trying to take it from him. It's incredible. The quality just keeps getting ramped up. We saw a more emotional side from MJ that we haven't seen. Like, obviously, they talk about...
Is the Kinda Funny Podcast is now The Last Dance in review.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see this week's episodes. So I saw the thing where he ends the interview and gets up crying. Is that the end of the most recent episode?
Pretty much, yeah.
How did he get there? Why is he upset? Why is he crying?
So like, it isn't even a thing where he cries because... he's sad about his father's death. You would think you would see that, and this is about his father's death. No, he's crying because his teammates don't have what he has. How he just has this will and this, like, I treated my teammates a certain way because I only ever wanted the best out of them.
Yeah, because I saw this part. Like, they might call me a tyrant, or this might make me look like a tyrant.
There's a whole section of it where they're like, they keep asking everyone to basically rat out Michael Jordan as being like an asshole. So nobody goes as far as to explicitly say he was a fucking terrible asshole to work with, but they do such a great job at showing both sides where he leaves the team and the team has a great playoff run the first year. Then the next year, they just completely fall apart. And everyone's like, oh, it was so nice. Like, we had this nice camaraderie and everyone, but they lost the driving force that was pushing them toward winning championships, which is Michael Jordan. And so I wish I could remember the quote, but he has this fucking unbelievable moment where nobody understands like my drive, right? I have one thing in mind, which is champions or the championship.
And which basically, is like us here, kind of funny.
Yeah, just exactly like us. But yeah, he talks about, Webby. He's basically like, he's like, you know, somebody has to be a driving force and it had to be me. And he goes, you guys don't understand. He goes, that's basically, that's what it means to be a champion. And that's what it means to be a leader. Basically, ostensibly alluding to the fact that in order to be a leader, sometimes you have to not be liked. Sometimes you have to be the guy that's basically in people's faces and shit. But there's moments where he took it too far. And I think that's where, like, you could tell that he believes it. You could tell that he thinks he did everything he needed to do to win those championships, but it took a toll on him. And that's when he gets up and walks away crying. That's basically what he was like, overwhelmed by the fact that everyone was like, dude, I was like, this is incredibly emotional. Cause it's so rare that you hear someone actually tell, like, show what they had to sacrifice to reach that level of fame and that level of like notoriety and like greatness. I mean, he's like a god tier athlete when it comes to basically to basketball, not so much baseball, but like it reminds me of watching like the Steve Jobs movies. Did you guys watch what was the one with
Pirates of Silicon Jobs? Valley?
I never saw Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Jobs. Silicon Valley was Jobs. Yeah,
it's I think it's actually on like Amazon Prime. I have a
key, I like I
think
it.
I had it queued up at one point, but Jobs, same concept, right? Where he just threw everything else by the wayside in order to like do the thing that he just inherently knew would change the world. And like, it's so rare that you get to see a person and you interview them 20 years later and you're like, was it worth it? Was it worth having that like shit? Like, and they were like, he asked this question a million times. So like, was it worth it? So like sacrifice some of that nice guy image. And he's like, you guys fucking have no idea what it takes to get like that level of what we achieved. Cause I guess like the 97 Bulls were considered the best team like ever to
play. Well, yeah, they had the best record of all time until the Warriors broke it 3 years ago.
Fucking Steph Curry.
Well, the year that the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead against the Cleveland Cavaliers, which is just like one of the what a great finals. LeBron James with the final block. Anyway, so but Greg, there's a phenomenal moment where Mike is off playing baseball, right? He leaves and he goes to go try. Which, by the way, anybody who hasn't played baseball in 11 years, if you can hit 200, that's fucking insane. Like, you're still, major league players are hitting 200 nowadays. Like, it's insane that he still was able to make that transition.
Well, I like the part where the guy that owned the Bulls, which is hilarious, he's like, yeah, I own the Chicago Bulls and the White Sox. And I was like, oh, you're fucking rich as hell.
Yeah.
But he was Tim.
So I have three things I want to say. I have two comments and I have a question of clarification.
Okay. We can stop talking about sports after this. Yeah.
No. It's very much about sports. One, I want to say, not being everyone that's watching this knows the story. I don't know the story at all. I just know Michael Jordan wins. So the twists and turns. Michael Jordan's dad being murdered.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
I didn't know he went missing, Tim. I didn't know it was a 3 week long thing.
Oh, you guys missed it, man.
And they start blaming it on
Chicago,
Michael.
It's like, Chicago ground to a halt when this happened.
Shit's insane. Second thing, Andy, you summed up this show perfectly in your tweet where you said every episode of The Last Dance, quote, I told Mike, nice hair, psych. Then he grew a full head of hair immediately and scored 48 on me.
Yeah.
That is every episode of this show. And you just nailed it. It's so satisfying.
The last two episodes are all that. Yeah.
Number three is my question. So Jordan leaves to play baseball, right? Baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then there's this whole thing. The Bulls are doing very well in their season or whatever. They're
still very good. Yeah.
But then mid-season, Jordan gets to come back?
The next year.
No, the next year.
Yeah.
So it wasn't
the next year. So I think he left in 93. The 94 season, I think they did well. They got to playoffs. 95 is when they fell apart and he came back. He started working out with them and then basically like was like, I'm back.
Well, they weren't even falling apart. It was just like that baseball had their lockout. And
oh, that's right.
And baseball had their lockout. And so Jordan stopped showing up to the White Sox practices. And then he eventually
Jordan ain't gonna be no scab, bro.
And then he just like he was hanging out with BJ Armstrong one day, and BJ was like, hey, come to the gym, come say hi. So he went to the gym to go say hi, and then he started putting up shots, and then he showed up again to the gym and started putting up shots. Then they started playing scrimmages, and the media was like, whoa, MJ showing up at these practices a lot. Is something happening here? And then he just put those two words, I'm Great. Back.
Dude, Greg, it's are you like that
fucking
time.
Kidding me, dude?
It's kind of like that time when I used to show up to your house with Tim, and we would shoot your shows for like pizza.
Yeah.
But I just kept showing up, and finally you were like, we should just all start a company together.
Who's Michael Jordan in this scenario?
I think I am. I think it's yeah.
Interesting. Brought that. Camera. Because you borrowed a camera from Fran.
I borrowed a camera that I looked on Instagram for 45
that's,
minutes.
Hey, that's what winners have to do, man. About ants.
I guess you just don't know.
That's the winner's mentality. Well, I do love the great part where, you know, Michael leaves and everybody is like, so Scotty, how was everything when Michael left? And Scotty's like, it was great. Like, yeah. He became the focal point and they were winning all the time. And then all the players were like, it was great because there was nobody mean around anymore. Scotty was the nice leader, and if you fucked up, he'd put his arm around you and say, hey, get him next time, and everybody was happy. Like, it's great. And then Steve Kerr has a phenomenal line where, you know, they get into the part where Steve Kerr gets punched in the eye by Michael Jordan, and Steve Kerr is like, look, I talked a lot of shit, I was gonna stand up for myself, I just couldn't always back it up. Like,
yeah. So I love that part. He's like, I know I was gonna stand up for myself, I just knew I couldn't back it up. But but yeah, no, it's awesome, I especially like the part in this where they tell the story of the guy that had a great game and put his arm around Michael as the game was leaving. He's like, hey man, good, he just said good game to me and put his arm around
some
me.
Random dude. I already forget his name. Just some, like, no, Horace, NBA Horace, no Horace name.
Yeah,
no,
had a great, no, yeah, no, it was, no. No, it was someone like that, but it was someone all the teams are blurred.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, because he goes that guy should, he's like, basically they beat him, and the guy came up to Michael after the Bulls had lost, and he's like put his arm around him, that said great game, right? And they asked the guy. And then, of course, Michael pulled a Jordan where he's like, that's it. That's all he needed to hear.
It's
just
fired up to me.
And just fucking destroyed them the next three games straight. Right.
Love it.
And then they ask him 20 years later, they ask the guy, they're like, did that really happen? And the guy's like, I never did that. And then they cut over to Michael now. And he goes, oh, I made that up. Yeah, I just told everyone he did that.
He would make up stuff.
Piss himself off. He would just make shit up so he could get fired up so he could dig deep and like win. And it's that's a level of psychosis that I don't know how you train into yourself. I think we start right now.
It was this random dude who was an early draft pick, and he scored 37 on Jordan. And Jordan had a bad game. And yeah, so that story is that he said great game or whatever. And Michael's pissed off. He's like, it's fucking disrespectful telling me great game. Who do you think I am? And he's like, I'm going to put up the same amount in that whole game in the first half. And he scored 38 in the first half against him. Ended with 48 points. And then, yeah, they're like, yeah, I made that shit up.
My favorite part is, I think it was like two episodes ago where they go to play for the Dream Team, which, by the way, how the fuck did we allow the Dream Team to happen?
We wanted to win.
Wasn't the Olympics supposed to be non-professional players?
Yeah, well, we changed that so we could send the Dream Team over there.
Well, Michael had won already 4 years prior to that.
Yeah.
Like, Michael was on that team before he was really MJ. Like, he was still on that team. So that's why they talk about MJ didn't want to be a part of this one, because he's like, it's extra playing. And but I already have an Olympic medal. Like, I don't need another one.
I like the first game where they were like, we're playing against Tony. How do you say his name? Kukoc. And Tony was like, and Jerry made a big deal of Tony coming and like being the next Michael Jordan. And then Tony, of course, was like, hey, they're having a civil war in my country, so I'm going to stay here for two more years and like be with my family. Like, the night they're like, he literally was like, I'm going to play basketball in my home country instead of going to the NBA because I need to be near my family, which is like the coolest thing anyone's ever fucking done. What does Michael Jordan and the Dream Team do?
I want to fucking destroy them. Fucking destroy
him. And he goes, they literally cut to Tony and he's like, I don't know why they did that. I didn't do anything to him.
I think it's so much more adorable because it's that Croatian accent. Yeah. You know, he's like, I don't know why they were so mad at me.
Greg, did you see that newspaper? Like, was it the Chicago Tribune or whatever? That just the front page, all it said was in giant bold letters, "I'm back."
Oh yeah, Nick. Oh yeah, the return of Jesus Christ. Yeah, I saw it. I forget if it was the Tribune or the Sun Times, but yeah, I think it was Sun Times, because Sun Times is the one that came in the magazine format.
Yeah,
that was so cool.
Right. I wonder what they set that up to in the documentary where they're talking to they had the PR guy or whatever. He's just like, I was writing, like, I didn't know what to say. And so I just asked him, and all he said was, "I'm back." And it's like, holy shit. And the way it cut to showing that newspaper and all that, it was just like, there was that moment. It was maybe like a 5 minute stretch in the documentary so far around that. That just, he's been a god this entire show. But like, I feel really, it's just like, he really has just completely molded to being perfect. Like, this is where we get the shot of the Jordan 10s, the shoes that we see the bottom of the shoe, and on
it's got the all bottom, the fucking things,
all of his accomplishments, and it's just like, Is there a so cool fucking thing you can do? And when Pippin was like, he pulled up the shoe up, pointed at it, said, come back.
Come back. That's so and he, cool. he talked about it and he goes, Scotty, put that thing up. I saw it. He's like, he sees everything and watches every game.
That's so awesome, dude.
I thought about you, Tim, during that one episode where he was like, you know, it was going to be maybe his last time playing at Madison Square Garden. So oh he wore God. The old school Jordan 1s and he oh. goes, Yeah. And he gets to the end of the game, and he's like, "These are the most uncomfortable shoe ever.
My feet were bleeding, and I put up 51 points.
51 points. Oh my so god, that was so epic. And there's nothing more epic than Madison Square Garden. Like that is so everything about that is just it's poetry, man.
I mean, the music that accompanies all this stuff, it's all phenomenal. But this is the Kind of Funny podcast each and every week, or sometimes five. Something.
Keep going.
Best friends gather around this table, each talking about whatever they want to talk about in their lives. My name is Andy, the host.
You're killing it, kid. You're killing it. Keep going.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
What if they want it ad free?
I'm no MJ. You could be a gold member on patreon.com/kindoffunny, and where you can watch it live with us right now. Or if you're what do you have to be on Kind of Funny Games?
You just need to be silver to watch live.
You need to be gold on one of the on games to watch. It's fine. Just
got it.
Fine.
Silver Patreon everywhere.
Generalize. Patreon.com/kindoffunny.
Just go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, everybody. Give us your Twitch Prime subscription on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames.
Yeah. Podcast services, Rooster Teeth, don't forget.
Around
post show.
The globe.
There's a post show, patreon.com/.
There's the post show, patreon.com/kindoffunny. And also, Nick made a short film for KFAF tomorrow.
Ooh,
and I really hope you watch it.
Very excited for it. That's exciting.
Andy, do you want to thank our Patreon producers? Assets?
Patreon producers.
Yeah, we got three Patreon producers. Take a shot in the dark. Can you get them? Can you get them?
Al the Predator Tribesman.
That's right.
Momo.
Yeah.
Mohammed. Yeah. And Justin.
And Garnier Frutesque.
Wrong.
Garnier Frutesque.
Both of you are wrong, and it wasn't a pronunciation I was going to get you on.
You see, it said Justin Tom Ferdy. I'm going to say shit.
Not white, but
out
tribes.
Blackjack Rizak. Good job, Andy. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Momo, the Predator, Owl Tribesman, and Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, Tim sent something to assets. Well, here's my question actually before I throw that up, I guess. I haven't been watching the documentary, but because I lived it, much like Pee-wee Herman in his big adventure. Have they gotten in the documentary to the part where he goes back from being 45 to 23?
Yeah.
Yes.
God, that was a crazy moment.
He's just like, fuck it. Find me. I don't give a shit.
Well, because he had the bad game as 45. Yep. And then BJ Armstrong, who was playing for the Suns, I think. I don't know who they were playing against. They were playing against somebody else in the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. And BJ was like, look, I played for them. I won 3 rings with them. I know how to beat the Bulls. And he had a phenomenal game. And then they were like, you know what? 45 is no 23. And he just switched it to 23. I was like, fuck it. Like,
you're right. Yeah.
Like, don't give it. And I love when they cut to Horace Grant. And Horace Grant is like, and then they said 45 was no 23. And we all went, why would you give him the fuel? Yeah. Why would you piss him?
Why would you do that?
Every episode, 20 minutes, every 20 minutes, they'll say, and then they said this to him, and then we fucking lost. Like,
this is how fucking crazy that time period was. Like, talking about the era when he did Space Jam. So they talk about on this news episode where he decided to do Space Jam. But when he came back that first season, mid-season, he was not very good because his body was in baseball shape.
Yeah, you're built in a different shape.
Yeah, totally. He was like, and he talks about the intricacies of it a little bit where he's like, you know, for basketball, like baseball is a little bit more like legs and a little bit more like core. But with basketball, he's like, you got to focus more on shoulders and all this stuff. And I never really put two and two together that they would tailor workouts for different types of sports. I just thought, dude, you're in shape.
You think everybody just rolls? That's how they get in shape.
I mean, exactly. They just stay on your back, take your shoe off, Andy.
This one confused me. What didn't you just say? He came back mid-season.
He came back. Yeah, he came back like mid-season in '95.
Came back mid-season. So he left for one full year, right? Mm-hmm. Then the Bulls started the next year, and then he came back mid-season for that year.
That's what I'm saying. How is that okay? How can you just play with the team?
Because he's still under contract. Because they're still paying. Retired, you still get like that paid, that guaranteed money. Or
also,
whatever.
It was Michael Jordan. Okay, they're like, we'll fucking trade bullshit. Everyone for Michael Jordan.
If you could just be like halfway through the season, be like, oh no, we're going to bring in this new guy now.
Yeah, I think it's the only time they still have the rights to him.
Got it.
And that so just like what recently happened, Rob Gronkowski, who retired as a Patriots player a year ago, and then Tom Brady is going to the Bucks. The Patriots still have the rights to Gronkowski, so they sold the rights to the Bucks, and now he's back with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, but no one in their right mind is going to sell the rights to Jordan. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I guess not. I guess not really rights. It's more of like he's still like contracted, I guess, as a Bulls player.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean like Nike.
I'm not talking like
No. But I mean, if you have sort of an option or something like that to come back, I'm sure when he left, they were like, "We will extend an option for your contract for however for fucking 30 years if you want. Just come back one day."
I'm shocked they went into all the gambling stuff. I was not because again, this is something that Michael Jordan sort of oversaw and had ultimate the final decision on to cut anything, and they. Like when they first started talking about him retiring, I went, ah, they're not going to talk about the gambling conspiracy. Stuff. Yeah, the conspiracies about like, oh, he really retired because he was going to be suspended. And he thought I'd rather just go do something else or whatever. But no, they
well, it, like it's funny. If you think about it on one level, you're like, oh, that totally makes sense. Until you realize that you start peeling it back and you realize that the foundation of that conspiracy was completely unfounded. Right. That was just speculation on the part of news people or the newspapers saying, oh, his dad was probably murdered because of a debt that he owed or something like that. And everyone's like, no, that's not like the police that found the two kids that murdered him were like, that's not their motivation at all. They were just random. This was like a crime of opportunity. And so like all that happens, then all of a sudden he decides like, what's more believable? He has to retire because he's put on a mysterious 18-month suspension by his team who didn't publicize it because he owed a gambling debt and someone fucking got murdered, or the guy that just took your team to three championships back to back to back and then lost his father, who was the inspiration of everything he had done, and like maybe he just needs a break maybe for a year, like maybe he just needed a year off. Like that's probably more believable to me at least. And that was like that's that part with the Father's Day shit too. I was like, oh my god, this couldn't be where they just have those. There's just a moment where he wins the championship, Greg.
Oh, I remember it.
He's just...
He runs in with it and cries. He drops on the ground. Yeah.
Ground crying.
Yeah, I remember.
Like
I remember.
Sobbing. To the point where I was like, I'm uncomfortable by the fact that someone's filming this. If I were in that locker room, I'd be like, you guys need to get the fuck out of here.
That's like one of the all-time like most famous sports photos is him clutching the ball. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and again, I mean, that was the thing of, I mean, when that happened and his dad went missing, and it was every night on the news, you know, I remember it was like destination viewing to figure out if anybody knew anything. And as that slowly started to get revealed and like him talking at the bar and these two morons following, as Jesus Christ. And then, yeah, for the game to happen on Father's Day, I remember that really, really well, really vividly.
It was crazy. It's crazy. I mean, how many, two more episodes left?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
two more. I don't understand how. So like I've been watching obviously a lot of documentaries on Netflix, and I think Netflix has some good ones and some not so good ones. My big criticism with Netflix right now is that they keep making documentary series when it should just be a documentary movie. And I know that I'm in the minority when it comes to Tiger King, because I know everyone's like more Tiger King than better. But for me, I was like, I don't think these characters are that fascinating or their stories that fascinating to warrant like 9 hours of watching the dude with the tattoos on his chest talk without teeth. But like when you watch an ESPN, I don't know who the fuck like is producing these documentaries over at ESPN, but like this one and the OJ Simpson one were so good. I'm like, this could just be an ongoing series forever. Like I would watch, just do another one. Cause that's the other thing too, is you guys watch the one about the Pistons?
Oh, the Bad Boy Pistons.
The 30 for 30?
Yeah, the 30 for 30.
I didn't watch.
Unbelievable. Another, you got to watch that one too, Andy, because it fills in the gaps of that 3-year span where they were like warring with
Rodman was there and everything.
Yeah. It was so good. And how they talked, it like goes from Isaiah Thomas's perspective. And he's like, dude, we couldn't beat the Bulls. So we had to figure out the only way we could beat them was to like basically beat them up.
Yeah.
And they're like, are you cool with it? And he's like,
well, here's what they've been hyping up with this, with the recent, like during the commercials of this Jordan documentary, are the new, they're doing a 2-part series on Canseco and Maguire.
And then they're
doing an episode on Lance Armstrong and the whole steroid stuff.
I saw that one. That one I want to see.
Yeah.
Cause that's another, such an interesting and complex story, right?
I mean, they're desperate for content right now. and they will go to any avenue to find it.
Well, I mean, desperation breeds some sort of weird, crazy excellence, because I don't, you're like, the thing that's crazy to me about this documentary, and I think you hit it right on the head, Andy, was that, like, it doesn't seem like they're pulling any punches, and they're sitting there in, like, I mean, they're like the moments where they hand Michael Jordan the iPad and they just let him hear the other guys talking shit about him. And he's just like, whatever. Like, it's so inspired and such a fun, like, you really feel like
the Gary Payton meme, like, they, like, these, there are these evergreen memes coming from here where Gary Payton, Greg is like, look, like, yeah, he stomped us in the first game or whatever, but we figured out how to stop him. We figured out what to do. And I wish we would have figured it out earlier. I'm not saying the outcome would have been the same, but it's likely that, I don't know, maybe we would have had a better chance against the Bulls. And Michael's watching on his tablet. He's like,
he just starts laughing.
And he's like, the glove. And he's like, I had no problem with Gary Payton.
That's so good.
He's like, I was going through other stuff. Like, it wasn't, you know, it was the whole Father's Day and all this stuff. And it wasn't Gary Payton, trust me. But, like, I don't know about that, because Gary Payton did a decent job on him.
You never know, Michael. That's the whole part of it, right?
But Ken Burns had some criticism about it.
Fuck off, Ken Burns. What are you doing for him lately?
Still pictures moving slowly.
Jesus, everybody's just getting mad at him.
Let's go get him. Everybody in the car.
Ken Burns' criticism was that the fact that Michael has any say-so at all, whether or not you say that Michael's approving everything and saying put whatever you want, that there's still, like, what about... I wonder if there have been questions that they were afraid to even ask Michael about, because it's, you don't want to piss him off, you know, like,
maybe. But I mean, that is the same for any documentary. Like, it's very difficult to make a documentary that's 100% objective. But, like, sure, having the, basically your interview subject have final say on what goes in and doesn't go in is a little difficult. But, like, it doesn't appear to me that they pulled any punches, and it doesn't seem like. Like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but are there any subjects they tapped on that doesn't seem like they're, like, he didn't allow them to do it?
They didn't talk about his first marriage, which...
Oh, yeah, they haven't talked about any marriage stuff, so maybe he did pull that stuff. But I don't know, I don't think that's necessarily relevant to the story of that the run for the Bulls. Like, his father was a direct result, like, his father was a direct influence on his game. I don't know if necessarily diving that far into his personal life was necessary. But I feel like they do a fairly good enough job at being objective, because they have the other people there and that are literally, like, contradicting some of the things that he's saying. I think that's probably good. But I mean, I guess for Ken Burns, like, I've only watched a handful of Ken Burns documentaries, and obviously the guy's a fucking unbelievable documentarian. But this one's got me. I'm sorry. Sorry, Ken. Your 18-part series on Vietnam was fucking phenomenal, but... Yeah. Did you win a championship game after that?
No. Good point. Good point, bro. Come on, bro.
You got an. I don't know if these documentarians won a championship.
you don't get a ring.
Don't win an SB for greatest
documentary. Yeah. This will definitely win awards. Absolutely.
I'm fascinated to see the Lance Armstrong documentary, though. I want to see how much they go into that, because he's talked. Well, I heard him on Rogan's podcast, and I'm sure he's talked on other podcasts a little bit openly about the steroid use and all that stuff. But his perspective on it, it's so crazy, where he's just doing this.
But he was so vigilant and so aggressive. Yeah. going after these people that were telling the truth, and him making up shit about them, and, like... He went through, he would have done anything to clear his name.
That's what I want to see. That's what I'm fascinated to see. Like, cause I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but I do know that when the reporters were chasing after him, he was, like, suing them and basically doing every single thing he could to shut them down. And it's just like, it's just so sad when you see other people talking about it. And he was like, I forget who it was, but I think there was a cyclist that did a documentary about that, and he had done, or maybe he was in one of the documentaries. He had done the sport alongside of Lance Armstrong, but he was at a much, much lower level. But he was like, everyone was doing steroids at that. Everyone's doing steroids. Everyone's doping in cycling. And he's like, if anyone tells you they're not, they're fucking lying about it, because you have to do that to compete at any level of any professional sport. It's kind of crazy.
Greg, did you see the preview or the first episode of The Last Ride? the Undertaker documentary?
No, I heard a lot about this. This is on WWE Network, right?
Yeah, just the first episode. It's episodic. The first episode came out on Sunday.
And is it his entire career, or is it just the last?
It's focusing on.
And they picked Last Ride after The Last Dance. Like, fuck, this thing's successful. Name it that.
Well, because his move.
I know his move. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, Tombstone Piledriver.
Okay. Yeah, well, one of the moves. But they announced this a long time ago. But it's focused. I only watched the first 20 minutes so far. But even in the trailer, it is insane of what they're going into. And like, you see so much footage I've never seen before of him, like, really? Post matches where it's like, bones are outside of his body and like they're like fixing shit. Like, it's real gnarly shit, and it's kind of like the realities of WWE.
That's awesome. Whatever.
And it's going over like at least the bits I was watching, it's like going over his career the last like 10 years where he's just like, I want to go out the right way. Like, my legacy is so important to this business and to me and to what wrestling is, but I don't want to go out incorrectly. And every single time, I want it to be the last time. And I just keep coming back and I keep getting in this cycle where it's like, this is going to be the last one. This is going to be the last one. And he's like, and now here I am. It's just like, I had a couple bad ones. He's like things were real bad. And they go into it. They're talking about the streak in a way I've never seen where they're like, it was going to be Randy Orton, the Legend Killer, WrestleMania 21 was going to have it. And Randy didn't want to do it. Edge was going to have it. Edge didn't want to do it.
And he didn't want to take it from Undertaker.
Yeah, so like, it's not worth it. We're not there. It's not worth the streak. And eventually, Lesnar took it. But it's just crazy, like, seeing him, because he's an old ass man, and it's rare to see Undertaker speak.
Yeah, and because correct me if I'm wrong, it's not Undertaker speaking. It's very much Mark.
It's Mark.
Mark Calloway, the guy who plays the Undertaker, but like, Undertaker's down here, and Mark Calloway is just a normal dude. And like, I remember the first time I ever saw him talk, I was like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, it's been real cool so far.
I have
all the episodes are up. I'm asking. That was a question.
I just re-upped.
This, and so I'm looking at.
We sold another one, Tim. We got another one, dude. Yeah.
Are you selling WWE Network too, yeah, Andy?
We have stock.
Oh shit!
Fine. Andy comes back in a WWE Network shirt. He's like, "Hello."
I see what you're talking about. Sorry,
Vince McMahon comes in off camera. Good job, Mr. Cortez.
Yeah, that's how it was on. Yeah, I see. You're right. Sorry, episode one, but then it's got the chapters beneath it that I thought were so diverse down here that it was the end of it, or it was multiple episodes, but it's just the chapters got it.
If I remember correctly. It was eight episodes, and they're each an hour.
Okay, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys a question? Another about a different documentary, wrestling.
Please.
Beyond the Mat.
Oh, I remember Beyond the Mat big time. Oh yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it in years.
It's on Netflix, I think,
or the DVD drawer over there. Yeah, I mean, it's like outdated, obviously, and everything. This is, if you remember, what got us not in trouble, but got us chastised by The Rock. Remember when we talked about The Rock the one time when we talked about how, like, the first time we ever talked on, I think it was Game Over Reggie show.
Oh, right.
How much we loved The Rock. And I was like, yeah, and it's awesome how great he is now. And he really seems like he's learned, because remember in Beyond the Mat, like, he beat the shit out of Mick Foley with a chair. And then, like, there's a whole plot line, like, reality or whatever of Mick having to go find The Rock and The Rock never coming to find Mick. And I told that story, and then The Rock actually listened to that podcast and did that long tweet thread to us of like, love brothers and thanks for this. And he's like, but Greg, I definitely checked on Mick. I definitely would have gone. And like, that's always, man, when we finally get our moment with The Rock, I want to talk to him about that, of like why it was shot that way to make it look like, and edited that way, I guess, to make it not look like it. But yeah, it's a great documentation of Mick Foley and like his feud with The Rock. Then there's the Jake the Snake thing, which is terrifying and horrible, but he's in a different place now than he was then, when I think he does meth in it and a whole bunch, maybe even heroin or something. But like, this is me remembering a documentary I haven't watched in years now.
And you know what I love about The Rock?
What's that? The pecs?
The pectorals. Yeah. Go on. Okay. I love that. I don't know why I expected him to just be past wrestling and just, you know, I'm done with that. I don't care anymore about it. I don't know why I expected that to be sort of a natural thing in his life.
Like, he was just not even acknowledged anymore. He was just
he's a movie star and like, that's what I did back then or whatever. But like, I love that he is still, you could tell there's still passion for,
oh sure,
the sport, for the entertainment aspect of it and for the sport. And I saw him recently talk about like, I've seen some matches on NXT before. And I just love that he isn't above it, you know.
Sure. You can't, like, you have to imagine, like, he loved it for so long, and that was his goal for so long. It was similar to like Jordan, right? When they catch Jordan watching basketball when he's playing baseball, love and vice that. Versa.
What a great just like, shot!
Yeah, he's just like watching the game, and you like you can't walk away from that. And like I don't want to put words in The Rock's mouth because we've only been friends for a couple of years now. Yeah. But like, there's gotta be a feeling when your movie launches, right? Yeah. And then there's got to be a feeling when you're performing in front of like 50,000 people
and the
in an arena pops. And you fucking jump off of like a 40-foot ladder and land on someone. And well, like, that's not, you know what I mean? Like, you can't forget that feeling.
Well, feeling of like having seen The Rock wrestle so many times, right? And then see his obviously crazy ass movie career, entertainment career, tequila career now, everything else, but then to go to that first SmackDown in LA before everything went to hell, and when it debuted on Fox or whatever, you know, last year, and the pop and the like for him to come out and go into the ring and go, you know, post to post doing his pose or whatever, like even in that moment, you're like, this is such a different feeling than having somebody cheer for you at the Oscars or cheer for you at a red carpet or whatever.
Absolutely. And like the thing that's crazy for me is like, I'm a very late adopter when it comes to WWE because like I watched it. I didn't watch it in the 90s when everyone else did. Like I watched it when my brother was watching it in the early 2000s. And The Rock was a part of it until he wasn't, because he left for the movie stuff, right? But it's like once we were watching, like he was already on the way out. He was only doing like one match a year or whatever. And it wasn't until like almost a decade later when IGN sent me to WrestleMania to cover the WWE game at that point, whatever. And it randomly worked out that the first wrestling event I've ever been to was WrestleMania 28, where it was The Rock versus John Cena. And that was like, it was The Rock's return to WWE, like period, like his first real match and stuff. And 10 years prior at, I think it was WrestleMania 18 or 19, when it was Hogan versus The Rock, it was very much a passing of the torch of like, you know, I define this generation, you define this next one, this is yours. And God, what an amazing match. And we don't need to talk about that. We get it.
We definitely could.
Maybe God, the handshake. Holy shit.
Remember watching that.
But when it gets to this match,
now I want to know everything about this match.
It was The Rock and Hogan going back and forth doing all their stupid over the top moves that are so silly, like the people's elbow and the leg drop and all this shit.
Right.
And Hogan is losing. Like it's the end of it. And like he like loses and The Rock wins or whatever. And Hogan like stands up, looks him in the eye, and just puts his hand out for the handshake. And The Rock shakes his hand. And it was just like, I just got chills right now. It's beautiful, man. It's just so good.
I'm dropping it in the thing for you. Just jump to the 30-minute, 46-second mark on the video I'm putting here in Discord.
Oh, what a beautiful freaking moment, man.
Dude, obviously I was super into wrestling. WrestleMania 18 is what, 2001, right? No, 2002, because I was at Mizzou. And I was already going, but I don't think I was living in the Antler house yet. I came over to what would become my house to watch it with Hayes. And I remember, dude, like fucking being in the, like just watching this and like knowing you're about to watch something historic, like you're about to see. Yeah, exactly. You're going to see it. But like even in the beginning when they just come face to face and they both do the alternating looks to other sides of the crowd, you know what I mean? The place is fucking going crazy.
They stand in the ring for like 5 minutes without saying anything. And the crowd just gets louder and louder and louder. Like they just couldn't contain the hype.
Dude, this is hype as hell, man.
are we supposed to be seeing it right now?
It's like a 27 minutes.
Right, because
you just asked us to pull it up. I
sent it. Yeah, I sent it to Slack for Andy and Nick, who don't know exactly what we're talking about frame for frame.
No, but what's crazy, though, is then, you know, almost a decade later when I got to see this WrestleMania match and it was Cena versus The Rock, it was very much the same thing. It was The Rock passing it to the next generation, and it was, you know, kind of Rock Hogan too in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It was just like, this is the next passing of the torch to John Cena, who we all understand, like he is Rock level of wrestling superstar, 16-time champion, whatever the hell, but also more than wrestling. Like John Cena is a Hollywood character as well.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll never fucking forget being there. We were in Miami, which The Rock has so many ties to, and it was the last match of the night, obviously the main event, and The Rock wins. That place lost their fucking minds because there was no chance that John Cena was going to lose to The Rock. Why would they do that? You know what I mean? Like, why would they do that? It was so important they did. It was so freaking beautiful. Then the next day they signed a rematch for the following year's WrestleMania, and then John Cena won. But man, I just love that so much. And like, but that's The Rock, you know. God, he knows what's up.
How fucking tall is Hulk Hogan? He's so big.
You met him, remember?
I don't remember. Like, everyone's just tall.
6'1", 6'2".
Like, Andy will appreciate this. When you meet tall people, you're all the fucking same.
Everybody's
you're
tall.
You're over six. Yeah. You're all there. Everybody's fair.
Tall. So, Tim, you said you started getting into wrestling in the early 2000s, or when?
The first?
Like, what's your first memory of wrestling?
My first pay-per-view I ever watched, like, live when it was happening, was WrestleMania 20. So it was way late.
Okay, gotcha.
And it was
my brother. Who were the marquee wrestlers at that time?
It was the triple threat match that was Triple H, Chris Benoit, and Shawn Michaels.
I don't know why. Okay. That's not that.
Which is one of the greatest matches of all time.
Yeah.
So I lucked out that it was like a good gotcha. Time.
Because I don't know why. I lose track of time so easily with what is early. And when I think of Tim getting in late, I think that he's getting in like not when Chris Benoit was alive, for sure. it's crazy to me that he was still alive at that time. Like, I don't know why. I don't see that as super late. Cause I was
post Attitude Era. It was PG shit.
Yeah. Because I got in before a little bit before Attitude Era, when it was still neon colored Sting and WCW, it was always like, what are you going to watch, Nitro or Raw? Are you going to watch WCW Nitro on Monday nights, or are you going to watch Raw or whatever? And that was always like the big, well, we're going to watch both, of course. And so I never fully understood like the allegiances, and are they one company? Are they combating? It was always just sort of like, it was just two wrestling shows for me, but I always was confused when certain wrestlers wouldn't show up in the other show. Like, I didn't understand they were two totally different. It was like the NFL and the NBA. Like, why would they mix up, you know?
Yeah. And then they did.
And then Invasion. They fucking did. Yeah.
Insane. The ECW got in the mix. Come on. You fucking
like,
kidding me?
I think the earliest days I remember were like Neon Sting and Ultimate Warrior.
Or 80s, yeah.
Yeah, early 90s, because I Ultimate like Warrior was still doing early 90s stuff, because I remember being
he was doing early 90s as well. That totally counts, yeah.
Yeah, I think like 94 was maybe when I started, because I remember in kindergarten talking to other classmates and maybe like first grade talking to other classmates.
I would love to have met kindergarten Andy. If I could go back in time right now, and if you want some candy, meet kindergarten Andy, you know?
Tying this back a little bit to the Jordan doc and the Undertaker doc, like, sure. You know, Jordan just kind of being greatest of all time, and every time he has an accomplishment, it, you know, it's just like, no shit, he's gonna do this. And then that 45-23 thing, the I'm back, all of that, so much of that is similar to the Undertaker, of just like, he had this streak at WrestleMania, like he is beyond what wrestling is and all this shit. And when I first started watching, like, it was leading into 20. So it was like a couple, like 6 months before maybe. And it was the run where Undertaker was the American Badass. So he was out there talking shit and whatever. He wasn't this like ethereal creature thing, right? And at Survivor Series, it's when it was him versus Kane, brother versus brother, in a buried alive match. And he got buried, like Kane buried him. And my brother was so like, what the fuck?
Yeah, dude.
Like, he believed it, you know, like for all intents and purposes. And then at WrestleMania, the Undertaker came back as the Undertaker. And that felt like the I'm back. Like, and they built it up that way, like with 20 whatever druids out there, like doing the choir shit, and like, oh my god, Paul Bearer and all that. Like, it was just such
the Undertaker,
and it was just him versus Kane. It was like, oh my god,
God, it's so good, dude.
Dude, like, it's funny because you know, you're talking about American Badass version of Taker or whatever, and American Badass version of Taker, before we knew it was going to be American Badass version of Taker, is literally the WB Montreal Batman game, where every pay-per-view you'd be like, it's happening, Undertaker's coming back this pay-per-view, Undertaker's coming back, and then he wouldn't come back, and you'd be like, what the fuck are they doing? And they did it long enough that I remember us all being so mentally beaten down that when it finally happened at that, I don't even remember what pay-per-view was though, but it went to the girls and like, he's here, and it was like, I remember until I fucking saw him, I'm like, this isn't the Undertaker. I'm like, this is not the Undertaker. The Undertaker is not about the come out right now. Like, what the fuck is this?
Nick, let me tell you about one of my favorite matches of all time, all right? Okay, it's Ric Flair's final match, all right? Oh, this is where he's about to go out. Was it WrestleMania
27?
27 in Miami, right?
No.
Somewhere in Florida. I thought it was in Florida. Maybe not.
I think it was Orlando.
Orlando, okay. So it's an outdoor arena. It's Ric Flair's like final match, right? And he's going against Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid from San Antonio, Texas. And by this point, Shawn Michaels is very old. He's no longer the Heartbreak Kid. We still call him
the Heartbreak Man now.
Yeah, he's like 44 at this point or whatever. And it's a grueling fight, and Ric Flair is old, and he's basically Mickey Rourke starring Portillo, right? Like, this guy is a broken down piece of meat. And at the very, very end, they've been fighting for what seems like an eternity. And then at the very, very end of it, Shawn Michaels is about to do the fucking Sweet Chin Music finisher move. And Ric Flair looks at Shawn Michaels, and Ric Flair kind of goes, like, he knows this is the end. He knows that this is his career is about to end right here. And he looks at Shawn Michaels, and he just does this sort of thing. And he's Shawn like, Michaels, they zoom in on Shawn Michaels, and he goes, "I'm sorry. I love you." Boom, Sweet Chin Music, dude, ends it. And, oh my God, I was like in tears, man. Like,
so fucking
that is one of the most epic. So it is one of the most epic moments ever, dude. God damn. I watched that at Caesar and CP's house.
Greg, that's how I'd like when you and I finally one day, I'm assuming 35, 50 years from now, when we do our final podcast, that's how I'd like it to be between us.
I'm sorry.
Where I just look at you, I go, "I'm sorry." And then I just kick you right in the fucking face.
Dude, one of the funniest things about that match, though, and it's the moment that leads into that, is that Ric Flair, a wrestler that we all fucking know, been doing this thing for decades upon decades.
The limousine riding, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, jet flying son of a gun.
You gotta love it. And he has his moves, right? He has the figure four. He has all these things that are just iconic to him. But one of the things that was most iconic to him was the flare flop, where he'd get hit and he would just oversell and just kind of like flop around. And that was always hilarious. But he would, every match, try to get to the top rope to do a big move and always get pulled down and then flop around. He never did the move. He never made it to the top rope until his final match. And he gets up there, and it's kind of like the dog chasing his tail. Where it's like, what's he going to do once he gets
I didn't realize that. Yeah, like, I kind of forgot that.
He makes it to the top and doesn't do shit. He fucking comes down. Everyone's like, what the fuck? And that's when he gets switching music. It's so good.
It's so good.
Such good storytelling, man.
Wrestling, man. Did you see the Becky Lynch stuff yesterday?
Beautiful.
Did everybody else see this?
I didn't see it. No, but I'm...
Becky Lynch, and now she's pregnant in the ring. And so, like, she was there with, like, her rival or whatever and was just like... And, you know, it's a giant empty arena. This would have played better with people, personally.
Way better. But
basically, like, you be a warrior, I'm going to go be a mother. And, like, that's how she announced it.
Oh,
and,
like, that's
cool. I'm pregnant. Oh, yeah. And then she has, like, this, like, fucking epic, like, bittersweet, sad moment of, like, leaving the ring for the final time.
Speaking of sporting events without crowds, did you guys catch any of the UFC event last weekend?
I didn't, no.
Yeah, it was good. Great fights.
I heard it was like top to bottom, like one of the best. Like even the undercards and everything were phenomenal.
I didn't watch any of the prelims, but I watched. The only fight I missed was the Pettis fight, which is the very first one. But the rest of the fights were fucking unbelievably good. But it was so weird to watch them fight with no crowd around them, especially when they do like post show stuff, where like Henry Cejudo announces that he's retiring, and everyone's like, "Well, okay." Like, no one's cheering for him at all.
Oh, man.
He's not retiring. I think it's just a money play. But what was crazy about it is you're hearing the announcers, obviously. They're piping in, like, Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier, who are talking. And they're, you know, it's Daniel Cormier, who is a fighter and has been a two-time champion and is known for being a little sillier on the mic. And then you got Joe Rogan. And they're just, like, they're talking. And at one point he goes, They're getting excited because they're watching this fight happen, and I think it was the Dominic Cruz fight. He's like, he's really got to start checking those leg or kicks, or it's done for him. And then he goes, "Oh, we should be more quiet. He can probably hear us right now."
Yeah, basically coaching. Yeah,
I'm literally sitting there, and like it's weird because for the first time ever, every once in a while, you know, when you're watching these events, you'll hear a coach or a corner man like say something. You're like, "What'd he say?" Clear as day. The corner people, it's like you're in the room with him. At one point, like the Tony Ferguson fight, it was Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje. And he goes, literally, Justin Gaethje's corner, because Justin Gaethje comes out, it's five rounds championship or interim championship. And Gaethje comes out and he's throwing fucking bombs for like two rounds straight. And at the end of the second round, his coach is like, hey, you got to back off those, man. You got to just take some of that, like take 10%. You're swinging for the fucking fence every time, you're going to burn out. And Justin's like, okay. And I'm like, it's so weird to be able to hear them give the exact like coaching advice that, like, you know, normally you pick up a little bit of
it. Yeah, that's bizarre. Yeah, yeah.
And they cut over to Tony Ferguson and his one of his coaches is like, I don't know, man, try an Imanari roll or something. Just like try a roll because he's getting his face bashed.
Listen, I have no advice for you. Just fucking do something.
Yeah, they did not coach him very well in that.
That's so weird. So they're just going to keep on putting on these events. Dana White was like, fuck it.
Apparently the UFC is contracted for so many events with ESPN and with various other, I guess just ESPN, that they have to put on some ridiculous amount of UFC. Like, they're not all pay-per-views, but they have to do like one a week basically on ESPN or something like that, or else they like there's some sort of contract fuckery about that. And I could be wrong, and I'm sure they'll extend it or something like that. But yeah, they do a lot. But it was weird. He was trying to do this for a really long time. It ended up being fine. I mean, if you ever watched The Ultimate Fighter or any of those reality shows where they don't traditionally have crowds when people are fighting, like, it's totally fine. You're still watching a fight, but the energy is definitely eerily different when you're watching. Yeah, you're just totally, in silence, yeah, watching two dudes beat the shit out of each other.
Well, I mean, that was the thing of even just tuning in. Like, I have not watched I haven't watched a full wrestling thing in the pandemic. I've seen the clips or whatever, but like watching the clip of like Becky announced it last night, right? Like, she says it, and then it's I can never say her name.
Asuka.
Thank you. She's the one there, and so she's like tries to start a Becky chant, and like there's no one there, and it's just like, I know what you're going for, but it's just like
they don't. To be fair to that, she's the only one that does that.
Yeah, it's like, well, no, I know, but I mean, I'm talking very specifically about this moment. I'm not saying overall with a brush. I'm saying in this moment that would have fucking killed an arena. Right, would have been so powerful. It was weird to go to her and have her be there. I'm like, I understand exactly why it's happening. I'm just saying, like, dude, oh no, this is her moment to announce it.
There was a moment last week where, after the fights, it was Henry Cejudo. I forgot the guy that he fought. It was Dominic Cruz. They fight each other, and Henry Cejudo wins. And Henry Cejudo is a phenomenal fighter, and he's won multiple times. And Rogan's like, you know, where are you at with your career right now? How do you feel, you know, going into this and winning this again? And he's like, is it cool to be considered one of the greatest fighters of all time? And he's like, I am the greatest fighter of all time. And he's like stumbling through this like bullshit, like
monologue
that they have to do, and no one's cheering. So it's just weird. It's right off the bat, it's weird as fuck. And then Joe Rogan thanks him like he always does, and Shane says it. He's like, you know, Henry, you're a great fighter. And he's like, I'm sorry to see you retire or whatever. And he's like, yeah, no worries. And then he does the thing that they do to the camera, where he gets right up in the camera like this and like flexes real hard, and it's fucking dead silent. It's the weirdest thing. Like, normally a crowd like, and it bled everywhere, but it was just like, he just went like this.
it's weird, man. So like, for WWE, like, a lot of the stuff that new
was like, I guess we're done.
It's in-ring stuff that is like awkward because of all those reasons. And majority of the people don't call out to the crowds, like they act like there is no crowd, which is good. There's like a couple of exceptions of people that are like playing into it, just being stupid. But this weekend, the pay-per-view is Money in the Bank, which traditionally is there's a briefcase above the ring, and then there's like ladders and six competitors.
Money in the Bank.
It's very similar to that. So there's six competitors in the ring,
funny,
fighting to get on the ladder and pull the thing. Whoever gets it first wins this thing. They get the opportunity to battle for the championship at any moment they choose. But for this one, because it's pandemic time, they're like, let's do something different. So instead of doing a traditional match, they did another one of the like cinematic matches like they've been doing at WrestleMania. And they're like, you need to climb the corporate ladder. And it started at the bottom floor of WWE headquarters. And the two briefcases for men and women were on the roof. And they had the 12 competitors, six women and six men, all at once fight throughout the building, going up every level to get to the roof. In theory, this is cool.
I heard it's awful.
It is so bad. There's no commentators. There's like cinematic music playing. It's all shot like a movie, but it's like with wrestlers, then the majority of them aren't really great actors. So it's like, it just highlights all the things wrong with wrestling, but it's still fun as fuck. Like, I enjoyed the entire thing. Like, it was super fun. But they get to the roof eventually, and a bunch of shit's happening. Baron Corbin takes Rey Mysterio and throws him off the roof.
I heard somebody say, I saw the Twitter threads of like, did Rey Mysterio just get murdered?
Then he thinks Aleister Black throws him off the roof, and it's like they're 56 stories up, and you literally just see Rey get grabbed, tossed, and you just hear him go, ah!
I like
Pirates of the Caribbean music playing underneath it, and there's no comment. Like, if there was commentators, would be like, did he just kill him? What's going on? But there's not. It's so weird.
That's awkward as fuck.
I mean, hey, I guess shout out to trying to do something, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, try.
Definitely in my mind,
shout out to try, but like, y'all need to try harder. Like, it is, they have so many resources, and I get that they're limited right now due to a bunch of situations. But if you're gonna do this shit, like, we could have made this more epic. Give us a Xavier Woods. We could do it.
For WWE, I agree there needs to be a level of like of showmanship for it, because that is what that is. It's sports entertainment, right? But with UFC, like, they literally got an arena, lit the whole fucking thing, and had ring girls. And I'm like, who are you telling what round it is to? The fucking camera guy? Like, the ring girl obviously is there for more tradition than anything else, because they've got signs everywhere that tell you what freaking round it is. But I'm like, why did you guys go through all of the trouble of mounting this giant production that must have cost the UFC at least $1 million to get all that shit together, rent the arena, get all that stuff together? Go to the UFC gym in Vegas, light the thing, and let people just fight there. Who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. Like, it's sad, and it's a sad reminder when the camera pulls out and there's a beautiful jib shot of an empty arena that people aren't allowed to watch this sport in person. I'm like, you don't need any of this shit. It's fighting. It's gonna, like, watching Francis Ngannou fucking murk someone in 10 seconds is going to be every bit as exciting in just a normal gym as it would be in this giant arena, because it's terrifying.
Giant empty arena. Yeah.
The Money in the Bank shot just kept cutting to a shot of a helicopter camera. It wasn't a drone. It was clearly like a helicopter going around the building of just this empty wrestling ring on the roof.
I just feel like they need, and you know what's funny is I say this half kidding, but half serious, is they need more people like us who are like, y'all need to just
hype it up,
reconceive how you do these things from like a smaller but more like just a different perspective. Yeah, like going bigger, having a helicopter shot of an arena is not going to get you what you want. You guys have to kind of reconceive this shit. I mean, granted, hopefully in the next couple months we'll be able to get back to the normal. But
what is aside from the few clips that I've seen what Saturday Night Live is doing on Twitter, I haven't seen a full episode yet.
Well, Saturday Night Live doesn't get laughs anyway, so it doesn't matter.
That's comedy right there. No, but like, I
on other people's products is comedy.
I'm not like, I just don't really know what else that they like. I've seen the few clips of Weekend Update, and I've seen Alec Baldwin beat Trump and stuff like that, but it's all like teleconference looking stuff. And it's also supposed to look like a Zoom call. I just don't really know what else that they're doing besides, I know that Adam Sandler did that short with Pete Davidson where they did a rap
behind the scenes of that. That was pretty cool. Like, breaking down how they did it. Cause it was very impressive for quarantine times.
Huh.
All I've seen so far is just a few interviews pop up here with, like, I think Seth, I clicked on something today. It was like Seth Meyers was interviewing Tina Fey, and I clicked on it and I was like, why don't they at least give them mics? Like, how do they not have, it sounds like they're just recording straight with their computer mic. I don't understand it, but
that's pretty much all of ESPN right now. It's still pretty bad. The level of production ESPN.
Which is surprising that so many people are still like that. We made a joke about it during the Xbox conference, right? Where it was like, again,
get some Yeti mics.
It's like, oh, you know, oh, the Friday or the, you know, the Friday before we all went to work from home, right? We were like, all right, what does everybody have? What does everybody need? And we didn't have it all on day one, but we had it by day four. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? To this level of production, it hasn't changed much since then. And it's because it's good enough.
How many people do you think work on the production side of ESPN? And what are the other 150 people doing, if not ordering mics for their talent and lights and like explaining it for them how to use it?
Yeah, Levitard Show still does the worst thing where because they're not just televising a Discord call or a Zoom call. Right. They can't just do that for whatever reason. So Levitard and Stu Gotts have their mics and their headsets or whatever, and everybody else is on a Zoom call. And when anybody else wants to speak, Mike Ryan will take his headset and push it up into the speaker so that you could hear them, or he'll take the microphone and push it up against the speaker so you could hear the other people talking. Like, it's still the worst system, and I can't believe that they haven't, you know, I hate being the fan of like, this is unacceptable, but it's like, it's crazy that they reference it all the time. Like, Dan will be like, again, we are America's sports leader, worldwide sports leader. We still have this setup. Like, why are we doing this?
I mean, it's weird because, like, you know, this is kind of just a testament of how lucky we are in the situation right now, both just with the pandemic, but also just in terms of production and entertainment, where we're of the YouTube generation, where we need to know the back end and front end. We can't just be on camera. We need to at least have an understanding of how things sound, look, blah, 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 all that stuff, like all the elements that make it work. But it is interesting seeing like the bigger guys just totally not nail it. But even with us, like recently, a couple days ago, we were doing collaboration content with Funhouse. It's going out for the kind of Funhouse week in a couple weeks that you'll be able to see on our channel and their channel. And just seeing yesterday, it was me, Nick, and Andy. And their setup's totally different than our setup.
Oh yeah.
And going through all the things, trying to figure out like how to nail how they do it. It's interesting because it just like teaches you a different side of stuff. And it's like not necessarily that we need to adapt those principles, but just learning it and seeing that there are other people that are putting a lot of thought into the content itself and like how we should optimize this type of production differently than we would in our traditional studio. It's really cool stuff. You know, I like that there's not just one answer.
Well, it also gives you like a sense of priorities, right? Which is like, our priority is obviously like, what is the path, the best and smoothest path of least resistance to get our content recorded and get it up to the audience. Whereas like when we were doing the Family Feud thing with the Funhouse, they are like, oh, we want you guys to record audio on your side. And they had this workaround for OBS where you could stream out of your OBS, like, and use your OBS as a cam and also record at the same time. And I was like, oh, that's really fucking cool. But obviously, like, for us, even though that's an option, I'm like, the level of quality that we're hitting with our stuff right now, I think is great. And like, I don't know, you have to weigh, is it worth having Cool G get all the footage together, download it, maybe waste half a day cobbling it all together, syncing it, and then, you know what I mean?
So it's show by show, right? And I feel like it's that level of understanding of what your product is, like, you know, criticizing WWE and UFC for like going too big in weird ways that make it feel small. I feel like with us, it's like KFAF like should be better because there's more being put into it, whereas like podcasts, these are conversation. Like, if one of us like lose quality for a little bit, like visually, it's not the end of the world. Exactly. Ideally, it wouldn't be there, but it's not worth adding 3 to 10 hours of editing and exporting and uploading to be able to fix that.
I mean, Andy and I talk a lot about various groups of musical artists and TGIF stars gangbanging him. So on NKFAF, so that demands quality. This week,
requires that. Tim, they taught me a really cool sort of OBS hack, and I'm just gonna say it right here. There's a big secret, big Funhouse secrets coming out. What we recorded a Let's Play. I recorded a Let's Play with him, and we did some CS:GO kind of modded game stuff, and we made the canvas of OBS 3440 by 1080. So it's 2 1080 screens sitting left to right, and you put the game up on one side and you put the full face cam on the other, so you have a full resolution face cam and a full game, and you record that, and then you could just use like the full resolution camera and not have to like get a shitty grainy version of a small webcam. I was like, whoa, that's really smart. Fucking good shit.
See, lessons.
And they're like, look, we would like, we're learning so many things because we are in this situation.
Something that I really want to learn, like, Andy, at some point I want to sit down with you on a Discord call. It's just like, I don't understand Twitch at all. Like, if I had to go live, this company would fall apart. Like, I have no clue how to make that happen. But it's just like little OBS things. I'm like, I should know this. Like, I should, like, yesterday, Elise was asking me to like do a bunch of things. I'm like, I am so lost right now. And I figured it out. It was easy. But like, there's just like a basic education that like,
it's just like whatever
makes us all better. Like,
whenever Kevin tells Barrett, if I die, you'll have to, you know, you'll know this. And that's what it's like with Tim. It's like, if any of us die and Tim has to go live by himself saying everybody else is dead. Like, you'll be able to go live. It'll be pre-recorded.
Nobody needs to know anything. You guys are totally fine. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. No, I feel like you guys don't have to know anything.
No, Kevin, do you feel like you're sort of a dispensable right now, Kevin? Like,
wait, Kevin, he said if Kevin dies, we'd have to.
When you figure it out.
Haunt us and as like a ghoul and still run our content?
I'm just saying you guys are doing a bunch of research and stuff you don't need to worry about. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine.
Because he knows once you do it and you stream it and you use an overlay, you're like, this is really easy. Wait, why does Kevin fuck it up so much?
Remember that time you cried and we're like, I need you to take over?
And it's so ridiculous how much easier it's gotten since then. Like, so it's not plug and play by any stretch of the imagination, but like it has come so. As somebody who hasn't touched it yet since 2015, when Kevin jumped on the grenade as the hero he is for Kind of Funny, like having to do it all from here, I was so gun shy about it, and then getting back in and be like, all right, well, OBS is still a piece of shit at times, but like it still is. I understand what I'm doing. The basics I understood, I learned in 2015 to do all of this. Mm-hmm. I can apply here, and the systems have come far enough where it's actually working rather than being more hurdles and more problems. And like the fact that for any of the stream stuff I've done on my own or from here, or me and Nick doing Last of Us, which is insane, of him streaming his PlayStation 4 to my PlayStation 4 and then me streaming that and the Discord out, and that worked. And it wasn't great, obviously. It wasn't like fucking, 1080, but the fact that it worked, and I do streams here of Borderlands or whatever, and there's no audio sync, which I always remember in 2015, in 2014, 2013, when I started streaming on my own, like being such a bitch of like going in and millisecond delays and all the other crap. The fact that, Aver's been able to come around with this system and get it to there. OBS is where it is. Discord's where it is. It's fucking phenomenal and crazy how good everything is.
Maybe, hey, Andy, maybe we should send Kevin to the Levitard show and just have him like text him stuff.
That would be phenomenal.
It's possible. Oh my god!
I feel like I could be very helpful to them. They probably
You've done great work during this quarantine.
They have a guy that works there that like he always tries to get on the mic, and they're just like, oh god, here he is. I feel like Kevin might turn into that role. His name is Lorenzo, but his real name is Lauren, and he just added the ZO to the end of his name. And every time he pops on the mic, he'll be like, what's up, guys? And they'll be like, oh god, here we go.
That doesn't sound familiar.
What's that like?
Ladies and gentlemen, how about a word from our sponsor? It's youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Are you aware, ladies and gentlemen, that you're watching a Kind of Funny product, and that's for some reason youtube.com/kindoffunny has more subscribers than youtube.com/kindoffunnygames? That's fucked up.
I'll give you one guess as to what that reason is.
You want to watch KFAF Garbo all the time instead of come get hot breaking news and let's plays and cool stuff over on youtube.com.
KFAF Garbo, we have a segment dedicated to you this week called Greg Does Amazing Stuff.
Sure it is. Sure. Okay.
We wrote a theme song for it.
You know what I mean?
No. It's very nice stuff.
It's good. I don't believe
we've turned it. We turned a new leaf. There's leaves everywhere. I turned them.
Yeah. Anyways, go subscribe.
Just like Transformers Age of Extinction.
Maybe
turn the corner.
What a shit show that fucking movie was. You don't understand. Like, it was. I got mad at it. I got mad at Transformers.
No, Age of Extinction is the one that
That's the one I turned the corner on, but I turned the corner right back for the last night.
You turned that leaf again.
I pretty much made the fucking block when it came to the last night. That movie, as I was doing the synopsis for it, I went through every range of emotion possible. Where at first I was excited, then I was scared, then I was super disappointed. And then right around hour two, I was like, I am fucking livid that I have to watch the next movie and talk about it. Like,
man.
When my wife's like, you need to get up and just walk around a little bit. Cause I was like, how are they do this? How could they make this? Like, he got paid millions of dollars to make that movie. Millions of dollars. And I work just as hard on every episode of KFA tomorrow.
Is it done? Is it done then? Are the last Transformers yet?
No, we got Bumblebee.
We have two more.
I can't fucking believe there's this many movies.
Well, we're cheating a little bit.
Yeah, we're doing the animated movie too. I'm excited to watch Bumblebee and
me
too. Those are good movies. Yeah, those are actually good.
I've never seen either of them. I think I've seen the animated one when I was a kid, and I just have like these very, very distant, hard to see memories of popping in the VHS and my brother watching it. But other than that, I don't know anything about it.
I mean, it is phenomenal. It's a kid's movie. Like, it's a kid's cartoon turned into a movie. Blah blah blah. Like, it's corny as fuck, and there's a lot of issues. But like, it is a cool story, and it's dark, and there's like character growth and shit, and like you don't get that from the show itself. So
why I'm excited to see that? Why is You've Got the Touch? Why is that the theme song?
You'll see in the animated movie.
Okay,
it's
okay.
The shit, and it's an amazing moment, in my opinion.
Guys, Danny Tamayo writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like you can, to be part of the show, and says, you've mentioned that you'd want to see the Elseworld/multiverse where Nick is married to Andrea. What other Elseworlds would y'all peek into? Not live in, just visit, like Disney World.
Oh, I feel like, can I address that first part real quick?
Sure.
I feel like we would either be the best couple ever.
No, it's not that.
Or I would be just so subservient to her.
No, we explained it. I said word for word. I said, Nick, she would dominate your bitch ass.
And that was the thing. If you remember how this was, it's an old kind of funny one where we all went out to eat at Chevy's before the world ended. And Andrea was there. Or Olive Garden, actually. I think I'd retold the story as out of Chevy's. Doesn't matter in the long run. And it was that thing of you and her were going at it and being Nick and Andrea. And I was like, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm happy you guys are happily married. I love your partners. They're both amazing. But there is a multiverse where you guys are married and I would love to see it. And yeah, Nick laughed and Andy goes, she would own your bitch ass. Yeah. And then Nick's response immediately was, Nick heard it, ran with a joke. And it was, how do you like my, it's my new Lexus. I don't really like it, but Andrea got it because we needed to match. Like, that was that universe.
God damn, that's funny. I'm funny.
I don't really like it.
Andrew made me get it so we could match.
You're such a bitch.
Oh, I know. God. I need it, dude. I need it. I have to have someone tell me what to do occasionally.
What multiverse would you want a glimpse into?
Ah, oh, fuck. I don't know. Like that sets such a tone for this conversation.
Yeah.
It's just like I'm thinking.
Take it your own direction, do you think?
Yeah. I don't know. People with like who. I mean, no, I know. You know what?
I mean, there's a world where I'm
if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. That's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not going to say. You guys, you know.
There's definitely a universe where Andy's working at Funhouse and gets me a job there.
Sure.
Really?
We do KFAF at Funhouse and it gets 2 trillion views every single day. Yeah.
No? Have we thought about asking them to rebroadcast old episodes?
Paying them.
How much do you think it would take for James to do that? Just hit the goo button. A couple $100, a couple hundred Benjamins.
A couple bottles of creatine, you know what I mean?
A couple anabolic. I think
be honest with me.
What?
Tim, be honest with you. Were you about to say something about Fran?
No.
I wasn't. Was it Sean Finnegan? No,
I wasn't. It wasn't Sean Finnegan either.
Let's go down the laundry list of people who usually get shit on.
Yeah, no. It's neither one of them, but God, it's fun to fuck with both of them so much.
Right. Yeah. Right. I like to see one. Again, a glimpse, because obviously everything worked for the better, but it'd be cool if we could look into the parallel universe where we didn't leave IGN.
I was going
to
say that, yeah. Where we still did this sort of in some way, but with underneath the IGN umbrella.
Well, I was thinking that we never, you know, we got to that point of where they were like, you got to make a choice. And we were like, all right, fine, we'll do IGN. Don't worry about it.
I would love to see that, but I can tell you exactly how that would have gone. Me and you would have 5 minutes after that happened, we'd have been like, we made a terrible mistake. We would have walked.
That's such a crazy idea. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, especially, I mean, there's so many ifs and ands and buts where IGN was great. But the moment we started doing this, it's like, well, this is it. This is what I want to do. It's like, there was no questioning. There was no looking back. So it's like, I would feel stuck there.
That would be the thing, because I think that's what it would be. Because I remember when we were even building up to this, where Nick had like a countdown clock on him, right? Where it was like, he's like, you were like, I've almost been here a decade. Like, I need to make the next move.
Yeah.
Like, what would have happened? Yeah. If we were like, for some reason, we're all like, you know what? We don't want to go. Or we're not going to go all together or whatever. If Nick would have been like, all right, cool, I'm bouncing. And then does he go to LA? Does he, you know?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I look at the landscape and there aren't too many places that I think, I mean, now there are. Now there's more opportunities out there, but there's nothing. Now you're
under teams, of course, with the rest of them.
Yeah. I mean, I would just go, I would basically walk in, take Mike Ransky by the pants, throw his ass out and be like, the fucking real man's here, you know? Time for the real head of production to fucking take over. All right, Nate Schott, let's get
Nick Scarpino, the head of production at 100 Thieves. Andy Quintez, what are your thoughts on this?
What's the elevator pitch on what 100 Thieves does?
What 100 the fucking they cash checks, bro. That's what they do. Okay. Nate Schott responds to one thing.
Don't know. I don't know. I just picture Nick in black and red joggers every day.
Oh my God.
And he's walking around and he's got like a sick ass fucking hoodie. And he's got always a Bluetooth headset on with an iPad in his hand.
No, Andy, that's not – Bluetooth's not cool anymore. I'd have one, but still the cord so people know they're in my ear. I'd have one Apple Pod in my ear all the time. And no one would ever know what I'm listening to. Like, am I talking to someone? Am I listening to a podcast? No one would know. Hoodie up. Everything would be black and
white. Joggers on, like, sick-ass shoes. Like, $400 shoes.
I would try somehow to show up in a new Lambo every day. Just a totally different Lambo every day.
Nick would kill it at 100 Thieves if he worked there. Like, everybody would love him, dude.
Hey, man. Who knows? No one knows what the future holds in store.
You never know, Nick. You never know, man.
It's possible I retire from Kind of Funny and go run an esports league.
I don't think they run a league. Yeah.
Andy, what's your pocket universe you want to look at?
God, I don't know, man. I love Nick doing 100 Thieves stuff, obviously. Yeah. I would like to see a world, an alternate world where Tim is running like concerts. Like he is sort of stage manager. He's sort of like a Matt Scarpino.
I'll go you one further. I don't think that. I think if Tim didn't go the route of being the host, I think Tim could have been the producer for like Macklemore. And like taking his shit up to like 8,000 and then eventually become an artist like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think you could have backed into like making people's beats dope and then making music videos that are dope and then concerts that are dope. And then eventually they're like, and then you have that moment where Macklemore is like, I'm just an old broken down piece of meat, Tim. And then he's like, you got to take the mantle. And you're like, I don't want, okay, fuck it. And you get on a stage.
Okay, fuck it. Yeah.
You know, you do the fast
forward. He's like, I'm 1 year younger than you. What do you mean?
Broken down piece of meat.
Yeah. It always goes back to the wrestler.
I love it.
I see Tim, being sort of this visionary that artists want to hire to really, really pump up their stage presence, pump up the look of their shit. I see Greg, maybe you just leaving IGN on your own and like not even doing Kind of Funny, but you just become you're just like the de facto of everything.
Yeah.
Like more than you already are, you know, like you're doing the WWE stuff, you're with Golden, you're shoutcasting, you're into esports.
Oh, wow.
You're commentating esports stuff and then getting dinner after the event with Nick Scarpino, who runs on
Thieves. Sinatra's going mid. He's gonna shoot that thing. He's about to get some points.
Yeah. Like you're like I think Greg would fit in so well with the esports world because it's so the pace is so breakneck. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I look good in a suit too.
Yeah,
you do look good in a suit. That's true.
Very tall.
Tim, if you ever go and be a producer for someone where you put like you put the sparkle on whatever else the content is, can we call you the Glitter Man?
You can call me that now.
Can that be your producing?
I just want to be kind of fun as Glitter Man, you know? I am already.
There's also a world where Tim is still, Tim worked at RT.
Oh, definitely.
That's a weird thing. Yeah. I mean, I wanted that more than anything, even when I was at IGN.
Here's a question. So you want RT. So in a parallel universe, maybe RT, but is there a part of your brain that's like, if I stayed at IGN, I would have done more with Simply Complex?
Not staying at IGN. No. IGN was very much the choosing, like, this is a strategy. This is building this up and like gaining the real world skills. It's the actual college. You know, and going forth. I mean, I remember being at IGN, when I was at IGN, there was a lot of opportunities with Rooster Teeth due to like connections I had and stuff where it was like opportunities came up where it's like I could have been a producer on Red versus Blue. And it's like, I didn't want that as much as I wanted that. It was like once it was a real opportunity, it's like, no, that's not actually what I want to do. You know?
Why not?
Well, because I feel like it's, you know,
just taking over someone else's thing or.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was a weird mix of, you know, to make this not just sound like, oh, I'm better than everyone. The other side of it is it's like, I'm not good enough to be able to do that to the level of quality that I enjoy it. Like it's not my baby. It's not something that I'm that good at. And then the other side of it is like, I just feel like my greatest strengths lie with production, with the glitter. You know, I need the Greg Miller. It's like, I feel like everything in my life worked out in a way where it's just like, I was like given Greg.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like I
thought like, you and I both were sort of, we adopted Greg for the low price of a box of Tabasco Cheez-Its.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's a good and box. That was it. Fantastic box. But yeah, no, it's like, it's one of those things where it's hard to think about a alternate reality because there's so many, well, if this happens, then that wouldn't happen, sure, you know, type things. And it's, you know, the hypotheticals are fun, but it's like, yeah, any of these variations, it's like weird to think about because I don't think there's a world where I was at IGN where I could break out and like be anywhere near as successful as I am if it wasn't for having you guys at the right time, all of us in different ways.
Oh yeah. I mean, like we talk real talk, like the idea of working for 100 Thieves while their new facility is great. I'm sure that company is phenomenal. That sounds horrible to me. Like what we do here gives us so much freedom and the ability to like actually feel, to whatever degree is true, I don't know, that we have control over our destiny is very, very like, it's invaluable. Like the idea of having three or four more bosses, ugh, forget it.
Nick, but they have a Cash App streaming room.
You guys, I'd like to
formally announce.
Formally retiring from Kind of Funny, and then I'll be back in a day.
So I guess actually though, trying to take the topic and like take it in a fun direction that's not just shrugging it off as something I can't do. If Andy had not joined us, because like, you know, we like the road of hiring people at Kind of Funny, if I'm being completely honest at this point, it gets a little hazy. But when it comes to you, Cool Greg and Joey, because you guys were just kind of like all there in different ways. We'd been working with all three of you longer than was public, where it's like Cool Greg would be editing in the background, just assisting Kevin like forever. It felt like Joey was always doing our social stuff, even though she wasn't living or working in San Francisco.
I first got her.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, I get a little hazy on that stuff. And then you were doing like the t-shirts and stuff. And like, I was in constant communication with you, like telling you way too many things that I shouldn't have been telling you at the time. So much NDA shit.
So many embargoed things. Man. More than I know now, it feels like. Jesus.
Oh, did you see the text? I texted you that.
I got it.
It was happening. Fuck Andy. I'm sorry.
but it was like, you know, I don't remember exactly the order of when everyone came and all this stuff, but you definitely were a different type of hire than the rest of everybody, where I feel like you were the first person that, I mean, we were hiring you to be an editor and stuff, but it was also with the idea that you're funny as shit and like going to be on camera to some extent. We didn't know what it was going to be, you know? And it's like, I wonder if you had straight up said no, because to be clear, you didn't say yes. And to be clear, you did say yes. You just also didn't act on it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you still haven't actually accepted the job here at Kind of Funny, Andy. So if you'd like to sign that letter, that'd be great.
I never was sent a letter. So.
Okay, well, now we're really digging to the middle of it
here. But it's like, well, in like, a world where Andy said no,
I would have angled for Achievement Hunter.
For you? Yeah. Instead of Funhouse?
Yeah, because I would have loved to have stayed in Texas. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good point.
I would have angled to work for Achievement Hunter or just somewhere else in RT, because that, like, much like Tim, opportunities were there when it was made known that I was leaving for Kind of Funny. And there was a lot of like, what if, how about this? What if this? I would have angled for Achievement Hunter probably. Yeah. Just because I feel like they were more up my alley of what I wanted to do and be on camera and be silly and find that comedic voice. Because even part when I was on the games team, my boss at the time, Michael Hadwin, was like, we kind of see where you're going. Would you eventually want to be like, yeah, you're the mascot. Would you just kind of want to be the voice for this company and be the guy who's always, would you want to be the
representative?
Almost like a representative. Yeah. Yeah. Bethesda, Pete Hines.
Phil Spencer.
Yeah.
I mean, face of the company.
I guess so. Yeah, face. I guess so.
We need Bernie Burns.
But more of like, we need somebody to go to talk about our games on other podcasts who is funny and personable. You know,
Tim Cook. What?
I just wasn't expecting a random voice.
Tim Cook. Well, because you know he goes and announces all the big stuff.
Yeah, for sure, Kev. But yeah, I probably would have angled for something like Achievement Hunter, or I don't know, something like that.
So if Andy were to go to Achievement Hunter, what would we have done? It's hard, like it's hard to go back and like think of that time period.
Oh, without Andy?
I don't think we wouldn't have changed much, right? Because it was, I mean, we were looking, every hire at Kind of Funny comes from what's our pain point that leads us to the next hire, right? So I think the hiring of Andy was, yeah, what's our next, what's a pain point? What do we want to bring in-house? Obviously, we wanted to do party mode. We wanted to do something like that. We wanted to have t-shirts inside. I feel like if he had said no, right, it wouldn't have been like, oh, fuck, scramble kind of thing. I think it would have been, all right, fine, we got to figure out the next person who can take that role.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what that would have been, you know, right. Even not a scramble, just I wonder what steps would have led to. And again, it gets hard because we know where we ended up. So it's like the easy answer would be, you know, like a Barrett or a blessing because that's what happened. But it's not necessarily an order thing. You know, it's like, that's where it gets weird. Whereas like our needs and for the team now are so unique to this time period right now, but in a couple of months, they're going to be different.
Of course.
I feel like the question was mostly asking like, who would we be dating in an alternate universe? But I don't want to put that energy out in the universe because people get creepy peepee.
I don't think that's what it was meant as. I think he told that story before. So what other else world? What other else worlds would you want to peek into? I mean, I think it's fast too. Like, I mean, I would obviously want to go peek into the universe where the Snyderverse continued. You know what I mean? Let's see what that Justice League Part 1 and 2 would look like, you know? Let's see what's over there. What about 9/11 not happening? What about the Titanic not happening? What about, you know, the wars not happening?
What if Kevin only had two cars?
What if Kevin only had two cars? There's a big part there too.
What if Kevin were a giant and could roller skate with his cars?
Are we inventing the pocket universe? we're just events that changed and now it's
put it in neutral, Paula. Put it in neutral.
Get the keys for the other car, Paula, the whole
Kevin, thing. Kevin, what pocket universe would you want to see? What other multiverse do you want to go to?
I don't know. Maybe back when we started working together and you guys were all making fun of me and I was like, no, it's fine. It's fine. Maybe if I had been like, yeah, you know what? It's not appropriate.
Oh, so you're thinking if you just stood up for yourself back then, your life now would be drastically better?
You know, nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Yeah, I agree. Who's
gonna say, Kev? I like how picking on Kevin. Like we said, he's a giant who roller skates with cars, and like we've pushed him so far that that's over the line. Fucking outrageous.
The thing about Kev is that he knows it's not over the line, but he knows that if most of the things that I say that are silly
we learned our lesson. You know what I mean? Like, don't let Nick finish. He's going to insult me at some point. If I give you guys an inch, you're going to take a mile. Right now, I'm a giant. Soon, it's just going to be me making fun of my three cars again.
Right now, I'm a giant. He's seen the narrative devolve. You know,
Kevin knows that. This thing Kevin is acutely aware of is that in Kind of Funny, a compliment for any member of the group. There it is. There he is. There he is. That's the giant roller skating. He actually hangs out with the giant that runs the hot tub. That's amazing.
That was a noon joke.
Kevin knows what everyone inherently knows is that a compliment for any member of the Kind of Funny team is just a little bit away from an insult. It's always just right up against an insult ready to come. So you got to be careful. You know,
you don't want to let his head get too big. You know what I mean?
No, God, no. God, no.
Well, I'm like, Andy, nice glasses. Still short. This is a Kind of Funny podcast each and every week. Four best friends gather on this table. Just come to bullshit with each other. If you want to bullshit with us, go to patreon.com/kindoffunny. You can give us your questions, your comments, your concerns, everything under the Kind of Funny sun. Be part of the show. Get it ad-free. And, of course, watch the exclusive post show. We are about to record. However, if you have no bucks to toss our way, it's no big deal. Head over to youtube.com/kindoffunny, roosterteeth.com, and podcast services around the globe each and every week to get a brand new episode chock full of ads, except for right now when nobody's sponsoring anything because they're dying. And also no post show, but you can still go to Patreon and get the post show there, or you can get the show ad free. You understand.
In the post show, I have a new Gia story that is similar to the Batman parents dying moment.
Oh, great.
Exciting. I like that. And then I have a question from one Charles Jacobson I'd like to get answered and have a conversation about with everyone.
Say the question right now.
It's a long one.
The show starts.
So you're trying to
really don't like that, right? We were doing that for a little bit, and they were like, no.
No, no. I mean, what they weren't liking, Kevin, what they weren't liking is when we would have a full-on 20-minute conversation, and then the show would start, and nobody would understand where we started off
from. Yeah. So we're Charles' question here of, like, when will you decide to delay the Kinda Funny Studio 2.0 event till 2021? And that's he has questions and he has stuff in front of it and behind it and stuff like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
Good. All right. So now we're going to the post show.